The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
This is one of those days that I wish we had longer than a one-hour show. There is so much to talk about in Arizona sports, whether it's the Cardinals, whether it's ASU football, the Diamondbacks, Coyotes getting going, Arizona players throughout the country on the college level making big plays on the biggest stage in college football. Just so much to get to here on the Brad Sessmatt Show. I'm Jordan Hamm filling in for the big guy. And wow, what a debut for the Arizona Cardinals in the Cliff Kingsbury era. I feel like there are more questions that need to be answered as we navigate through this early season. But a lot of not so sure at the beginning, and then all of a sudden they came back with a fury and tied the Lions 24-24, went to OT 27-27, and the Cardinals kick off that era with a tie. Who would have thought that would happen? Like I said, a lot to get to. This is the rundown brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most on the show. We're going to have Catherine Fitzgerald, Kay Fitz, from AZ Central Sports. She was at the game, had a lot of good content on the old Twitter in terms of what she wrote, a lot of really good stuff. So we're going to discuss what exactly we saw yesterday, as she had an in-person account. And then Michael Fabiano, NFL Network senior fantasy analyst, helps break it down on the fantasy end, not only with the Cardinals, but Antonio Brown to the Patriots. How is that going to affect not only Antonio Brown, but Tom Brady, the other receivers, and really the rest of the AFC? AFC should be on alert, I think, for the Ravens and the Patriots 1 week in. So a lot of interesting stuff that we need to get to, but we'll kick things off with the Arizona Cardinals and the Detroit Lions. Eric Sorensen was out at that game, checking out the debut of Cliff Kingsbury, of Kyler Murray. And Eric, got to be honest, first three and a half quarters, it looked pretty rough. Did I hear boos through the telecast? Was there boos happening as the offense was coming off earlier, or was that just ambient noise that I was
hearing?
Lots of booing.
And deservedly so. I mean, the product, Cliff Kingsbury, Jordan said after the game, was the worst offense he'd ever seen through three quarters. And although they did turn it around and they did earn a tie, the Lions are right down there with the Cardinals as not serious playoff contenders.
It's a bottom third NFL team.
I kind of woke up this morning and was like, okay, they didn't lose. Kyler showed flashes. Love the fact that David Johnson averaged 4.5 yards a carry. Love the fact that the Cardinals had 100 rushing yards as a team. But it's a tie in your home opener against the Lions, and it's just sort of
It was one of those things 2 hours after that I was thinking it could have been so much worse, and simultaneously thinking they had so many chances to win the game,
no doubt,
and they were not able to. Like, that's that weird tightrope we're walking right now with that team, whether it was the near-miss pick six with 10 seconds left in overtime,
yep,
or the play calling when it was first and goal from, what, the two, and they're not able to punch it in. They had to go for field goals quite a few times, but then all of a sudden something clicked. I'm not sure exactly what it was. Did you see a certain moment or anything where all of a sudden the script was flipped and it was all of a sudden, okay, this offense is doing what it should be doing?
Yeah, deep balls to Larry Fitzgerald, I believe it was early in the fourth quarter, really seemed to kickstart that offense and re-energize the crowd. I was stunned how many Lions fans there were yesterday, Jordan. I mean, you'd think, like, Lions not one of the better teams in the NFL, mm-hmm, but there was a lot of blue. But it seemed like once Fitz got involved, so I think he only had, like, seven receiving yards going into the fourth quarter, and he finished with well over 100.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of flipped the script, as you said, and they made enough plays. And the thing that I know that you watch him a lot at Oklahoma, like Kyler Murray, he's gifted. I know he's small, but when he was on, he made some unbelievable throws, like hard NFL off your back foot, on a line to the opposite hash mark 30 yards down the field throws, and you're like, okay, I see what all the hype is about, but then you also see a couple bad decisions, and he just played like a rookie in his first game.
And you saw quite a few plays where it was, whether it was by design or improv, him rolling out to the right, rolling out to the left, just kind of buying time. There were a few times where he was 20 yards behind the line of scrimmage, yep, and then just still taking a shot. And that, I think that's kind of going to be the roller coaster of Kyler Murray. He always wants to continue the play, so we'll see how that progresses. I'm sure there are going to be quite a few plays where it's like, holy cow, how did physics didn't happen there, where they get a 40-yard pickup, and then I think there are going to be a couple where it's a 20-yard loss, and it's because he's trying to extend it too much.
I would love to see Cliff have him run more, because late in the game, it was they ran the zone read a couple times, and he kept it, and it was like 12-yard gain, 8-yard gain, and you didn't see that a lot early. He was either hand off to David, or they were running pass formations out of it, but they did execute in the fourth quarter, and they were able to come back, and the Lions lioned, as someone said in the press box. Like, if there's one NFL team that would just perfectly fit into this storyline of big lead, dominate through three quarters, and then somehow find a way to blow it, it would be Detroit.
Well, and it's kind of like that movie Draft Day from a few years ago, where it's like their first overall pick, a team that doesn't know what they're doing. Oh, of course, it's the Browns.
Right.
Like, the Lions would have been another good candidate of that. And, Matt Patricia helped them out quite a bit with a couple of timeouts that he just burned, where it was like, what are you doing? Like, just, you have the lead,
exactly,
or you're tied. Like, you're giving them opportunity. What
and
is
schematically,
going on?
Schematically, the cool thing that I saw from Patricia was he used a lot of college schemes defensively to go against a predominantly college offense. Like, when it got to be 3rd and 17... they'd rush three, and basically the linemen up front, the D-line, wouldn't even rush. They'd just stay in their lanes and sort of create this semicircle around Kyler, and they'd have the eight guys back, and all the Cardinals would do would dump it down and get 7 yards and punt. Instead of blitzing and leaving people on islands, he did a great job of surveying the circumstances and situations and playing off of that, but in the end, it was a 27-27 tie.
So. Interesting stuff. And the bad news for the Cardinals moving forward, they have the Baltimore Ravens, who put up a franchise record for points yesterday against the Miami Dolphins. Yes, it's the Dolphins, but Lamar Jackson can throw the football, guys, and he can throw it very far. You saw Mark Andrews dominate. Marquise Brown had quite the debut, and the defense looked really good. So you saw the Cardinals struggle early against we'll call it an average defense. The Ravens are not an average defense. So definitely something to keep an eye on, and that first road game for a lot of these players as well. ASU football, speaking of struggling offensively early and then coming alive and able to take care of business, they beat Sac State. They have a big game moving forward against Michigan State, the number 18 team in the country, still led by Brian Lewerke, former Pinnacle quarterback. But 19-7 win. And there are so many parallels between this ASU game and this Cardinals game, where ASU was able to move the ball a little bit, but they just couldn't quite find the end zone. And Zendejas was able to kick multiple field goals before it was finally the dagger, the third down pass to, or a fourth down, excuse me, to Eno Benjamin. He was able to take it 70 yards for the touchdown, and that kind of put things to bed. But Sac State definitely played very well, and as some people on the broadcast said, this is a resume game for the head coach, the defensive coordinator over there, to say, hey, we limited ASU to this, when he's looking for jobs over the next couple of years. But again, young quarterback, Jaden Daniels, I thought his presence was very good throughout. He was able to extend the plays. He's a guy that will never go, try to force anything. And that's the impressive thing about Jaden Daniels. But with that offensive line, just the shuffling has continued. And with Michigan State, you need to have a solid offensive line play if you want a chance. That's what they were able to do last year to keep them in the game, and then eventually just kind of drown Michigan State in the second half and kind of suffocate them with the defense. They got a couple big scores. But then, if you remember, they had the ball with like the final 5 minutes of the game, and he was just able to – they were able to milk the clock and get it down to no time, and then Brandon Ruiz kicked the go-ahead field goal. You're going to need to do something similar because this Michigan State team is pretty darn similar to last year. And again, first time on the road, first big time opponent. And then all of a sudden it's what you host Colorado, who got a huge win, huge comeback win against Nebraska. You go on the road to Cal, a big win over Washington. Washington State is always a tough game. I think, thankfully for ASU fans, that game is not in Pullman because those games just get weird. And then you're on the road at Utah. So the next month or so, you really kind of get slapped in the face with Pac-12 football with some really tough opponents moving forward. There are no cupcakes those next couple of weeks. So definitely something to keep an eye on against Michigan State. Coming up next, we are going to have Catherine Fitzgerald of AZ Central Sports breaking down that tie game between the Cardinals and the Lions. That's coming up next on the Brad Sussman Show. We continue our conversation on a wild season opener for the Arizona Cardinals by bringing in Catherine Fitzgerald of AZ Central Sports. Catherine, thanks so much for joining us.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
So a lot of, or next to zero offense in the beginning, and then all of a sudden the offense clicked. Cardinals seemed out of it, and then all of a sudden they were in it into overtime, and then it ends up with that wild tie. Just what do you make of this season opener for the Cliff Kingsbury era, for the Kyler Murray era?
Yeah, it was weird. I think that's kind of just the summary of it, where you look at not even a tale of two halves, but the first three quarters, even into the fourth quarter, were reminiscent of last year's season in a lot of ways, where they were going three and out a lot. Andy Lee looked great since they were utilizing him frequently. But just nothing was really, they couldn't get anything going. And then late in the fourth quarter, I was like, okay, there's signs of life here. That worked. That was good. Until they finally tied it up, sent it to overtime, and then obviously still ended in a tie. I believe it's the first tie in football I've ever seen in real life. So that was certainly unusual. But yeah, even the guys in the locker room, Kingsbury afterwards, they were kind of like, well, didn't lose, so that's better than losing, but didn't win. So hard to kind of analyze it.
Where did the offensive click happen? Like, at what point in the game did you see, okay, all of a sudden this is not stagnant and they're starting to move the ball and you're seeing progress?
Yeah, I think on the drive leading up to Zane Gonzalez's third field goal of regular time was like, okay, there are some things here that look like they're working, but then when they had to settle for a field goal again, it was like, oh, you know, maybe spoke too soon, not sure. So when they finally just got into the end zone on that David Johnson touchdown, I think that's where, you know, it seemed like, okay, things can actually work here. Kyler Murray can get a touchdown in the NFL, which we all know how talented he is. But since it took so long, I think they just really needed that kind of tangible touchdown to feel it.
With the offense, we heard going into the season, no one really knew what to expect. We heard Cliff Kingsbury say that no one had seen this type of offense before. Through most of the game, it felt like we had seen that type of offense before, and there were some interesting wrinkles with how they used motion and handing off. But just what do you make of now seeing the full-fledged offense unveiled? What are your thoughts on the schematics of it?
I think we still need to see a little bit more. You know, I think for those first three quarters, people were kind of using Cliff's words against him, like, well, they've never seen this offense before because there's nothing to see, it turns out, which late in the game was not true. But he mentioned post game that he felt maybe he was trying to be a bit too creative with play calling, which understandable, your first game in the NFL, you want to kind of have a splashy debut. But I think without getting Kyler Murray in a rhythm, it's still kind of hard to gauge exactly what this offense is going to look like. The end of the game gave us some hints there, but it'll be interesting to see what they do for week two.
talking to Catherine Fitzgerald of AZ Central Sports. Now, a lot was made of Kyler Murray's debut, but also quite a few other rookies made their debut, specifically Byron Murphy, Zach Allen. How do you think that they played on the defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, I thought the defense was really interesting. Just in that there, I felt there were more questions for the defense going into this. And I think both of those rookies played really solid. Cliff Kingsbury said post-game too that basically he wasn't surprised at how they performed given they've known for a few weeks they were going to have these big roles so early in the season. So having that preparation, that mindset going into it really helped them there. But yeah, the defense, I think, early on in the game, they were spending so much time on the field, but there were times where they did kind of let the Lions charge down. I think there was one drive of like 95 yards where not exactly what you want. So they've got a lot to clean up on defense there too. But, you know, from rookies on both sides of the ball, I think strong first performance.
Yeah, I thought the defense overall played pretty well. They obviously gave up a couple of huge plays, and the tight end position really abused the defense. And now that you look ahead with the Ravens, I know a team that you're very familiar with, being a Baltimore native. The Ravens had a couple big plays in week one. Mark Andrews, the tight end, played very well. Just what do you look for them to do, the Cardinals defense now to do, to take those next couple of steps to make sure that they limit the Ravens moving forward?
Yeah, I didn't catch all of that game yesterday, but I think putting up 59 points is certainly something that would alarm any opposing defense. One thing that I found was notable is we've been talking about the run defense for the Cardinals for so long. They only allowed Detroit 116 yards last night, which I know in times they wanted to keep it to 100 or less. And that partially was because, you know, the Lions put up more than 300 yards of passing. But even during the preseason, that was something I was still watching a lot, where it was such a narrative last season against the Chargers, didn't look great. Again, preseason doesn't totally inform us of what the rest of the season will look like, but just to kind of have that storyline feel like it was continuing, I think that's something that they can still tweak a little bit, especially, you know, when you're going up against someone like Lamar Jackson, who Cliff Kingsbury spoke very highly of this past week, unprompted. Like, he was just asked about dual threat quarterbacks in general and went straight to Lamar. So I think it'll be an interesting challenge for the Cardinals defense to try to contain him.
With the kickoff of the season, it always seems like some questions are answered, but more questions can now pop up. What questions, what's the biggest question, what's the biggest storyline you want to keep an eye on with this team over the next couple of weeks?
That is a good question. I think I'll be interested to see what David Johnson does. He had 82 yards last night, and rushing yards, that is. Obviously, had that touchdown, too, on a pass from Kyler Murray. But I think that's been kind of a lingering question for a while, just what will he look like? And I feel like given how weird of a game it was last night and how much of it revolved, the discussion revolved around Cliff Kingsbury, Kyler Murray, you know, I think there's still a lot to be seen from David Johnson and just kind of whether or not he'll get back to those 2016 numbers will be interesting, especially since this offense is trying creative looks receiver-wise.
Now we are with Catherine Fitzgerald, AZ Central Sports, does a great job reporting on the Cardinals, but one of the reasons I love her is she is also a great Twitter follow, one of the more entertaining Twitter follows that you will have. And you had a lot of observations during the game, so wanted to do a pseudo rapid fire, ask you some questions based around some of these tweets. We'll start with Mason Cole was reporting as an eligible receiver for two plays in a row. Could that creative offense just be the big guy touchdowns? Stay tuned to find out. Now, it didn't work out that he was targeted at all, but on this Cardinals roster, who is a non-traditional player you want to see score a touchdown this year?
I mean, if we can just get totally weird, definitely DJ Humphreys. He is hysterical in interviews and celebrations too. And if you're going to already have a, you know, unusual person in for something like that, someone who will talk trash afterwards is a big factor I would weigh in.
I think that's a very good choice. Next tweet, huge sack by Chandler Jones on Stafford. He forces a fumble, recovers it, and is doing his guitar celebrations. Cardinals get it back one play later. With the Cardinals in season one, or in game one, I should say, Brett Michaels planned the halftime performance. Who had better guitar form, Chandler Jones, Brett Michaels?
Tough question, because during halftime I left to get a hot dog. But I think Chandler's guitar celebration was pretty much back to where it's been before. I think he ran a little bit further than usual to really have his space to fully play his guitar. I don't know these words, but I think he was really, the energy was there. Technique, a little off compared to an actual musician, but you can't make up for passion.
He was going down the catwalk. He wanted his solo. So yeah. Next one, when Chase Edmonds said, "All I ask for from our rookies is gummy bears. That's all I love. I felt that." Now, if you were to get into a player was to get into Cliff Kingsbury's good graces, what do you think the gummy bear equivalent would be?
Ooh, I don't know that he goes for sweets and treats like gummy bears. I thought something very effective last night was the matching headbands for everyone in tribute to Kyler Murray. He liked them too. So maybe like all matching sunglasses for Cliff. I think that's a strong element of his brand that they could lean into.
All right, there we go. And then the last one, not enough people talking about how Demir Bird's name literally means cardinal. He's playing for the name on the front of his jersey and the name on the back. Can't teach that level of dedication to the team. What other, again, maybe a lower tier player here on the roster trying to get in the good graces, show the dedication. What other things could they do to show they are dedicated to the Cardinals?
I mean, nothing says dedication more than a tattoo. So I think anyone who's unsure should just get like birds everywhere. Temporary tattoos are trendy again. Love to see it, but go all in. Maybe.
That was going to be my answer as well. Nothing as permanent as a tattoo. So
great lines.
Great stuff from Catherine Fitzgerald as always. Thanks so much for having some fun with us and talking some Cardinals.
Awesome. Thanks, Jordan.
That is Catherine Fitzgerald from AZ Central. Coming up next on the Brad Sessmatt Show, we're going to be talking to Michael Fabiano of the NFL Network, talking all things fantasy football. Welcome back to the Brad Sessmatt Show. I'm Jordan Hamm filling in for the big guy. We are now joined by Michael Fabiano, senior fantasy analyst for NFL Media. Michael, NFL season is back. That means fantasy football is in full effect. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm trying to get over all of the craziness that occurred yesterday and trying to figure out what's going to happen in these two games tonight.
So let's rewind to a couple days before yesterday with Antonio Brown making the move to the New England Patriots. What does that do for his fantasy value? Obviously, him getting on the field here now seems sooner rather than later. So how does that affect Antonio Brown owners?
Well, I did not like the move to Oakland, and it's hard not to like this move to New England, regardless of how he got there. Some would call him a little bit unprofessional, but now he's in a spot where he could end up being the top 10 wide receiver from a fantasy perspective, again, catching passes from arguably the best quarterback to ever play the game. And if you watch the Patriots offense last night without Antonio Brown, the rest of the league is probably pretty scared when he gets back on the field in week two. So AB is... he was always going to be a guy you were playing regardless, even if it was in Oakland. Now in New England, he's got a higher ceiling.
Now with Tom Brady, how does that affect his value? Obviously, has another weapon that he can go to. You had him ranked number 14 overall for quarterbacks entering the season. Adding AB, what does that do for his rankings?
He's going to end up being the top five quarterback now. It's so quickly that things can change. When the Patriots were able to get Josh Gordon back, that helped Brady's value. And now he gets arguably maybe the best receiver in the game. So this past week, monster game against the Steelers without him, and now he gets Antonio Brown, and he's playing the Dolphins, who got destroyed by the Ravens. So suddenly Tom Brady is a must start. I mean, he's pretty close, at least this week. And at 42 years old, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up breaking the record for the most fantasy points scored by a player at that age, because Antonio Brown is now in the mix, and that is a huge acquisition.
In terms of the Dolphins, is it already at a point where if you have a fringe guy and they're playing the Dolphins, you're throwing them in the starting lineup just because you think you'll get that Dolphins bump? Or if you have a defense that you could pick up on the fringe that's playing this Dolphins offense, is it already at that point week one in for the Miami Dolphins?
No question. They look terrible. And I don't know how many games that team is going to win. I will tell you this. You're starting all your Patriots next week. You're starting the Patriots defense. You're streaming defenses against the Dolphins. Until they prove us otherwise, that's going to be the strategy. And it could be a defense that's not very good. And if they're playing the Dolphins in a home game, suddenly they're going to be an option off the waiver wire if you like to stream defenses. That's how bad this team is right now. I mean, they don't have a legitimate number one wide receiver. Their running back situation, well, Kenyon Drake coming off of an injury, Kalen Ballage, who did nothing in that contest yesterday. Until the Dolphins prove otherwise, this is a team to target in your matchups, both defensively and with your offensive skill position players.
Talking to Michael Fabiano, senior fantasy analyst for NFL Media. Now let's go to the Cardinals. And Michael, I had a whole list of questions through three quarters of that Cardinals game asking you about just how bland the offense looked, how mm-hmm. much it struggled, and then all of a sudden something clicked, a light flipped on with that offense. What do you make of what Kyler Murray was able to do in that week one performance fantasy-wise?
So Kyler is somebody who I loved going into the season, and he was a player that I had faded a little bit this week because the quarterback position is very deep, and I wanted to see what Murray was going to do. So what happens for three quarters? I'm thinking that was a good decision not to play him. And then the fourth quarter in overtime hit, and Kyler ends up having a big game. That's what I expect from Kyler. I expect him to be a quarterback who can give you 18 to 20 fantasy points week in and week out. Now, the matchup coming up this week, in week two, is not very good against the Baltimore Ravens. So this could be a week that you want to fade Kyler. But it looked like he got comfortable. Larry Fitzgerald is just, I mean, he's, if I had to start an NFL franchise, the first wide receiver I would want is Larry Fitzgerald. He's just tremendous on and off the field. And we also see David Johnson succeeding as well. And Johnson had his numbers looking pedestrian at best until the Cardinals sort of got into the groove and things clicked. So it was a tale of two games for the Cardinals. It was first three quarters, man, this looks bad. Fourth quarter in overtime, hey, I can work with this.
With David Johnson and his owners, it has to be encouraging, though, at least seeing how often he was targeted last year. Looked pretty stagnant on all fronts, but you saw him get involved in the run game and the pass game. Just what do you expect for David Johnson now the rest of the way, fantasy-wise?
Well, David Johnson was a first-round pick. I was expecting this from him, and it was great to see him utilized both as a runner, 18 carries. I believe he had six catches out of the backfield. That's how he scored his touchdown as well. He averaged 4.6 yards per carry. So this is what we expected. I don't know that we're going to get David Johnson a couple of seasons ago when he just absolutely went ballistic, but we all expect him to be a top-five fantasy running back. And through three quarters, we were a bit concerned about that, and suddenly, we're feeling pretty good about it. Although, again, the matchup this upcoming week is a bad one. David Johnson is not someone that you're benching in most cases.
With the rest of the league, some big storylines. Nick Foles goes down. Gardner Minshew steps in and looks really good. And it looks like that Jacksonville wasn't afraid to pass it at all in a pretty competitive game. Just what do you think of Gardner's fantasy value moving forward? Obviously, probably not a must start, but a guy that certainly makes things interesting if you don't have a quarterback option.
Listen, I've been doing this for 20 years, and I will say never, because you never know. Honestly, I mean, he went in and completed, 22 of 25? And, I mean, this guy, you want to talk about being green. I mean, this is another level of green. And he came in there and looked very, very sharp. So, two QB leagues, super flex leagues, he's going to get a look. In traditional leagues, he's not going to get a look. He's a player that you're going to watch. I think the one thing that concerns me is the fact that, you know, we saw DJ Chark go off. We saw Chris Conley go off. Dede Westbrook got into the end zone, but he didn't have a huge game otherwise. And Dede Westbrook was sort of the consensus breakout player from that Jaguars offense this season. And I don't know that we're going to see that, because Nick Foles really loved to target the slot receiver. Now, potentially Minshew, now he's going to get some work, obviously a lot of work with the first team offense. Maybe he'll gain a little bit of a rapport with Dede Westbrook, but this move hurts his value. I think the player whose value is going to remain and maybe even increase a little bit, the Jaguars are going to have to lean on Leonard Fournette a lot in that offensive attack. So Fournette is going to get the ball 20-plus times week in and week out as long as he's on the field.
How much value does Austin Eckler have right now? Obviously a great week one here in the fantasy season. And as Melvin Gordon continues his holdout, looks like he'll get plenty of opportunities moving forward as well.
Listen, Austin Eckler's fantasy owners were smiling. I had him listed as a start. The one person not smiling, maybe there's two, Melvin Gordon and his agent, because Eckler went nuts. I mean, you're looking at a guy who almost scored 40 fantasy points, three touchdowns, effective as a pass catcher, and that's sort of what we knew. Eckler's a playmaker, yards after catch, yards after contact. This is a guy who can make plays. So moving forward, I don't know if he's an RB1. He's going to be pretty close. He's a guy you're going to keep in your lineup regardless of the matchup. And as long as he's getting opportunities, and volume is king in fantasy football when it comes to running backs, he's going to be in your starting lineup. And I know there's reports out there that Melvin Gordon expects to come back maybe, you know, 6 to 8 weeks into the season. At that point, is there a committee scenario? We'll see. But right now, Austin Eckler is a very solid fantasy option, and that's obvious after what he did yesterday.
Who surprised you through the first NFL Sunday?
I can't name one. Like the rookie wide receivers. Marquise Brown, no one drafted him. Everyone's thinking they're going to run the ball 65% of the time. He went nuts. I mean, but here's the thing. He didn't play many snaps, but when he got the ball, he made it count. The Jaguars' two receivers that I just mentioned, you know, Chark, Connolly, that surprised me. I was surprised about the Lions with Danny Amendola having such a monster game. And I really like TJ Hockenson, but typically rookie tight ends don't come out and do that. And he's going to be a popular addition off of the waiver wire. I was shocked to see Terry McLaurin go off against the Philadelphia Eagles. Case Keenum looked great in that contest. Not that I'm picking him up off the waiver wire, but he looked great. So, and that's just one of many things that surprised me. I wasn't surprised that Todd Gurley's volume went down. I was surprised that Todd Gurley lost goal line opportunities to Malcolm Brown. Hopefully that's not the case all season long, because that's really going to put a big time, you know, that is just going to hurt his fantasy value as a second round pick. We learned some things in week one, but we're not going to really be completely educated until probably the third or fourth week of the season. But this kind of thing happens, and the one thing that I would tell people, don't overreact. Don't overreact if your player had an awful game. Don't overreact to a waiver wire pickup that you might make of a player who had a monster game, because this is a week in and week out league, and we learn that every single season. The one thing that's predictable about the NFL, it's always unpredictable.
Michael, we appreciate the time and the insight as always. Thanks so much.
All right, take care.
That was Michael Fabiano, Senior Fantasy Analyst for NFL Media, and this is the Brad Sesmatt Show. Appreciate Catherine Fitzgerald and Michael Fabiano for joining us today. Obviously, on Monday's football season, it's going to be a football-heavy show. But wanted to talk some Diamondbacks. They are continuing to make a push for the NL wild card, and it is very helpful to the Diamondbacks that the Cubs have struggled mightily over the past couple of weeks. Right now, they sit a game and a half out. And this is something I mentioned last week and kind of want to go a little bit deeper on this week, is just, I think if the Diamondbacks don't make the postseason, one of the things they can look at is our various Sundays where they were going for the sweep, not able to pull it out, but more notably where they have a lead late in the ballgame and they give it up. It's happened twice in Colorado. It just happened this weekend against Cincinnati. I can think of three or four times throughout the season where it, obviously any loss is going to hurt those chances, but it just feels like when that happens, it's just like, oh, the momentum gets rerouted just a little bit and you have to sit on that and most likely travel elsewhere. I think that could be, if that's the reason they don't make the postseason, or if they don't make the postseason, that's the first thing I'm going to look at. And it happened again yesterday. Mike Leake has really come alive for the Diamondbacks, struggled so much in his first five starts or so, and has just been lights out ever since. 6 1/3, 7 hits, two earned runs, 3 strikeouts. That is why they traded for Mike Leake. is to just eat up those types of innings. Yeah, he gave up quite a few hits, didn't strike out many guys, but he's learned to pitch to contact. That's one of the first things he talked about when he joined the Diamondbacks, was his ability to his loss in velocity over the years, but he's still been able to be effective. And you watch some of his pitches, and they're just dipping and diving and, you know, doing everything, and that's just a two-seam fastball. It's something we've seen. I've seen him do at back when he was at ASU, you know, what, 13 years ago or something like that. Over the last 13 games, Diamondback starters, 2.88 ERA. Like, you can't ask for much better than that. Offense was okay yesterday. Ketel Marte continues just to be a monster. Like, this guy, kudos to Mike Hazen for seeing that potential, recognizing it, and getting him to a very team-friendly deal, both him and Eduardo Escobar. Like, they've done such a good job finding those guys, get them on manageable deals, and, you know, and then simultaneously getting rid of the massive hunk of money that Zach Greinke took up. And again, now there's that flexibility. But Diamondbacks now headed to New York to take on the Mets. And then the rest of the way, they're hosting the Reds, hosting the Marlins in San Diego, and then they wrap up the year hosting the Cardinals and hosting the Padres. And again, if you're a Diamondbacks fan, you're going to want to watch two teams over the rest of the way. It's the Diamondbacks. It's the Cubs. The Cubs have struggled mightily, and that's helped open the door for the Diamondbacks. They're starting to take advantage, do a great job. As I said last week, I had an old baseball coach that said, you know, where you let teams hang around. And this is something that happened yesterday with the Diamondbacks and the Reds, where it's he would say, you have your foot on the dude's throat, just finish the job. And I can think of quite a few times where the Diamondbacks haven't been able to do that. And that could be the difference, whether they make the postseason or not. Otherwise, I mean, regardless, I'm looking at this season as a success, because they've been competitive, they've remained competitive, and they've had to move on from some players. And when you think of the deductions that are subtractions that they've had this offseason at the trade deadline, and they're still competitive, that's pretty darn impressive. That also speaks to the National League a little bit, of just how it's been, you know, the wild, wild west, granted over the course of the entire country, but it's just been a kind of crazy group of teams just kind of cannibalizing themselves. But the Diamondbacks, no one was expecting this team to do what they did. And you have a ton of rookies in this rotation that are pitching pretty darn well right now. Your real only veterans in that rotation right now is Robbie Ray and Mike Leake. And they're in the middle of it. And that's all you can really ask. Obviously, no one is going to catch the Dodgers, I think, really over the next couple of years. But you remain competitive in the NL West, you're going to have a good shot for the wild card and move on, you know, potentially to a division series. And I know Mike Hazen has talked, that's a distinct disadvantage, obviously, and he's looking to take those NL West titles away from the Dodgers. But they're building towards that. And when you think of where the Diamondbacks were when he took over, and the tire fire of the season prior to when him and Torrey Lovello took over, they've done a very good job remaining competitive, replenishing the farm system, and you haven't seen hiccups. For 3 years, the Diamondbacks have been in the mix for the postseason. Like, that, when's the last time you've seen that consistency from this ball club? 2008, 2009? Do you go back to the early 2000s? I don't know.
The deeper we got into the summer, Jordan, the more I started thinking back to the conversation Brad had with Pedro Gomez right after spring training. And Pedro was just like, it's pretty much doom and gloom. Like, there are so many unknowns. This team is in, you know, they have the Dodgers, and everyone thought maybe the Giants were going to bounce back. And here we are. They're a game and a half out. And what you said I thought was so poignant, because I looked at the same thing. Mets, Reds, Marlins, Padres, Cardinals, Padres. I mean, like, it's right there.
Cardinals and the Mets are the only ones in the mix for a postseason.
And the Mets, I mean, I don't know.
And
like,
the Mets, yeah, the Mets
they get the Cardinals at home. I know the Diamondbacks haven't been great at home this year, but it's not like you're facing teams that are really trying to get that or trying to – a lot of these teams, it's like, okay, it's September. It's been a long year. Like the Padres, and so the, you know, the, obviously the Marlins, it's, they're just out there playing. Yeah, it's going to be competitive, but it's setting up where – they're a game and a half out. They've been on a tear. I think they were, what, like, how 5.5 back at one point? Like
at one point, yeah.
Weeks
it
ago?
Seemed like for weeks they were just hanging around four back.
4.5, yeah. Something like that. And it's great. I mean, considering what Mike Hazen has done, it's getting Greinke off the books. And like you said, like kind of revitalizing the pitching staff with Leak. It's impressive.
They set an MLB record for being, for the longest span, where you were either two games over 500 or two games under 500. And the Diamondbacks Media Relations sent out a great note about that, and the title was the MLB's most okayest team. And since then, that's when they went on this run and on this tear, and they're peaking at the right time. So I think, yeah, I think regardless, really, you have to look at this season as a success. But, you know, it's within reach, and you would hate to see that especially the Diamond for Diamondback fans to know you were so close and not able to get it with kind of, we'll call it a ragtag group. Like you said,
the word around the water cooler was always like, yeah, they're not a playoff team.
Right.
And I even said, yeah, I mean, they've had a nice year, but again, they're a game and a half out, and guess what? They might be a playoff team after all, whether you think they are on paper or not. They're right there.
At the beginning of the season, I thought they were going to exceed people's expectations. I didn't think they were going to be, on the precipice of making the postseason. I think that also speaks a little bit to the National League as well. But listen, it's a fun time in Arizona sports right now, where you have a new era for the Cardinals. At least they're interesting. We don't know what it's going to be. It's at least interesting. ASU in a new era as well, year two. The Suns are trying to put things together. The Coyotes are on the verge of making the postseason and brought in some big names. The Diamondbacks continue to be competitive. Three straight years of being in the postseason mix. I don't know if you can ask for that much more for the first 3 years of Mike Hazen and Torre Lovello. Been pretty impressive. I want to thank Catherine Fitzgerald from AZ Central Sports for joining us to talk all things Cardinals. Michael Fabiano from the NFL Network talking fantasy football. We are full on in football season, folks. We're going to blink, and it's going to be December. And I love this time of year. A lot of fun stuff going on. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Brad Sessmatt Show. I'm Jordan Hamm.